Welcome to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We hope the following program will challenge you and encourage you in your faith journey.
I like to eat at restaurants like the Olive Garden.
I like to eat at restaurants like Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I like frozen yogurt.
Yogurt is a joke.
And
it's a joke.
Dan and Jane Seaborn will explain some more contrast today between men and women and how those differences can impact your marriage. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fuller, and our host is Focus on the Family President Jim Daly.
John, this is a great presentation from a Promise Keepers event recorded back in the 90s. And here's why we're airing this timeless message today. Dan is challenging men to really think about what it means to follow the biblical admonition to nourish and cherish your wife, in spite of all of the differences that you have in your relationship. Let me quickly set up the visuals for you. Dan is speaking at a large stadium filled with men, and on stage he has a candle burning, and the flame represents a marriage. Later on, you'll hear him use a squirt gun and fire extinguisher as he explains how that marriage flame can be extinguished.
Yeah, Dan is very creative on the stage, and Dan Seaborn, for that reason, is a much sought-after speaker. He's an author and the founder and president of Winning at Home. Jane Seaborn is a former math teacher who enjoys coaching women to love their husbands in practical ways. And here now are the Seaborns on today's episode of Focus on the Family.
I want to tell you guys that yesterday, I'm going to do a little confession before I start. Yesterday, I wasn't a good husband. My wife and I flew down here. I've been traveling Alabama, other places. She's sitting right here. She's going to do something in a minute with me. You'll meet her, Jane. This week, I've been up three or four nights this week to 1:30 dealing with issues. I'm tired. I'd like to go home and not have issues for a few days. And some of you are sitting here and you got like big burdens about you. You'd love to bottle up what you felt this weekend and take it home. And didn't start out there, did it? I mean, see, I remember thinking and hearing about marriage and family and going, oh man, when we get there, that's going to be fun and easy. Oh my goodness. Because I remember the first girl I ever dated, I thought I was going to marry. That's the unity candle that represents unity. I thought I was going to get the unity candle with the first girl I ever liked. She was a pretty girl, man. Sanja. Her name was Sanja. And she could kiss good. I remember her really good. You kids, you're teens and kids here, remember that first one? And I remember I liked her a lot. And I struck the match. I struck the match with her that I thought was going to get to the unity candle. I thought I was going to marry that girl. I struck that match, and it started burning, and it burned out. I didn't get to the unity candle with her. Didn't make it. And then I left first grade, and then third grade, I met Tina Harrison, old Tina Harrison. I grew up in South Carolina. She's a little South Carolina girl. I lit that match, and man, she was prettier than Sanja. And I thought I was going to get the unity candle with Tina, but I didn't make it. It burned out. And I kept striking matches just to watch them burn, country song. And you know, I didn't know it at the time, but a girl named Jane was striking matches too. In fact, later on I found out she was going through books of matches, man. She was playing with them. She went through a book of matches in college. The problem was most of them were my buddies, you know. And finally, one day, I'm going to tell you how I met Jane, because one of the things I want you guys to know is I'm one of you. You sometimes see speakers get up here on stage, and you probably have this thought like, oh, he wrote a book. Let me say something about people that write books. Whoop-dee-doo. It just means that somebody did something, helped them get it there, okay? That don't make you squat. But I want you to know, I am just like you. I struggle just like you. That's what I want you to see. And so I want to tell you how I met my wife, because, you know, you probably look and you go, oh, I bet he was out praying and the Lord brought her walking up to him. Nope. We were in college, and she was at a vending machine, and I couldn't even see her front side. She was at the vending machine, and she had put her money in, and obviously the thing wasn't working, and it didn't do it right, and it dropped it. You know when it gets hung up in there? And the first time I saw her, she was reaching up like that right there. And I walked up, my buddy David Hyatt was walking. It's a true story. I don't lie when I speak, okay? I'm walking with my buddy David Hyatt, lives in Pickens, South Carolina. I was walking with David. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I looked over, and this girl, I didn't know who it was at the time, but she was standing there getting that thing out of that vending machine. And I said to David, I'm going to go over there and help that girl, and if the front matches the back, we're good to go. That's what I said. Yeah, yeah. So don't walk up to me and say, oh, Mr. Spiritual Guru. Uh-uh. I didn't start out spiritual. And I struck that match, man, that girl. I talked her into it. We went out on a date. She didn't want a date. She said, you've heard this. She said, I just want to be friends. I hate that, man. But I tricked her finally and got her to liking me. And we struck a match. And we lit our unity candle. I want you to know this summer it's been burning for 25 years, a little over 10,000 days. The problem is we're not alike. You know, I just can't get her to see that she's got some areas she's got to really change for us to be alike. And see, we are really, really, really different people. In fact, I'm asking my wife to join me out here for a second. Help me welcome Jane. I wanted to show you how different we are. Come on out, babe. This is my wife, Jane, 25 years. She's a math teacher, so she uses the math part of her brain. I don't even get math. I always say to people, when X plus Y equals Z, it's over. You know what I mean? I don't get that. But what we've done here, for your sake, to help you understand how much like us, you know, you are and we're like you, we made a list of our differences. We did this, how long do you think, 10 years ago we started doing this? And people enjoyed it. So I want to just kind of show you some of our differences. Let's do it, babe.
To start with, I'm more of an introvert, and being in front of you is not very comfortable for me.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
But I told her if she'd do this, I'd take care of her later. So she's willing to do it. Just kidding.
I like hot tea.
I like sweetened iced tea.
I don't like to be sweaty.
Oh, I love to sweat.
To me, yellow lights mean you're supposed to stop.
To me, yellow lights mean floor it, baby, floor it.
He drives way too fast.
She drives way too slow.
And I keep both eyes on the road when I'm driving.
I keep both my eyes on her when I'm driving.
And Dan drives too close to the car in front of him and too close to the center line when he's driving.
And Jane drives too close to the center of every pothole in the stinking road when she drives. You got a wife like that? I'm like, honey, didn't you see it coming?
I like grilled chicken.
I like my chicken deep fried and Crisco all uncovered and shake and bake. We got to do a women's conference sometime so all the women will cheer for your stuff.
I like, whenever I stand in front of the mirror, it's to primp and get ready.
I'm flexing, man. I'm checking it out, you know.
And I like for things to stay the same.
Yeah, I change something every day. It's just my style.
Yeah, and when we disagree, he wants to just talk it to death.
And she's the one that gets really quiet, and that just drives me crazy.
When we golf, I'm patient with groups in front of us if we have to wait.
I like to sting a ball right off their forehead, man. That ticks me off. Hurry up, hit the ball. You're no good. That's why you're so slow.
I like to go to bed early.
I do too, if she's up for it. See? Okay. I only got a few minutes.
I like baked potatoes.
French fries.
I like ranch dressing.
French.
I took Spanish.
French.
I like to cuddle and kiss.
French.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
I prefer water over pop any day.
I prefer pop over water any day.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things in life to do is to read a good novel.
I like to read the comics.
Yeah. I like to sleep in warm nighties.
I prefer to sleep in the buff.
And I enjoy watching movies like Sleepless in Seattle.
I fell asleep watching the movie Sleepless in Seattle.
I like quiet music.
Give me something with a beat.
Yeah. I like to eat at restaurants like the Olive Garden.
I like to eat at restaurants like Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I like frozen yogurt.
Yogurt is a joke. And it's a joke.
I wouldn't say I'm good, but I'm okay around the house with a tool.
She's very good with tools. I'm actually not good with tools. You're good with tools.
I prefer a good massage.
I like to be very lightly scratched.
And I think it's important to look nice when you leave the house.
It does not matter how you look when you leave your house.
I like the color fuchsia.
Blue.
I like for my undergarments to be neat and clean.
Holes, baby, big holes.
I prefer to shower alone.
I prefer to shower together.
I think kittens are cute.
Dead. Thank you.
I always iron my clothes.
Wrinkles are cool.
I love to watch shows like CSI.
I love to watch shows like ESPN.
I prefer small groups.
I like a big crowd.
And I would never, ever yell at a ref at a ball game.
You know, somebody's got to tell those clowns when they're wrong, you know? Sometimes if we're at a game and, like, I'm yelling at a ref or something, you know, hardly ever do it. When I do it, Jane will be like, honey, they recognize your voice, you know, because I do radio and stuff. And so I'll go, you ref, you're an idiot. Get out of here. Change your voice, you know. If you're a ref here, God bless you. Thanks for your ministry. Mind the word.
When I see a sign, I follow the rules.
I don't even see the signs.
When I'm sick, I don't whine.
I don't mean to, but I need her when I'm sick.
I don't think that physical intimacy needs to be such a big focus in a marriage.
I agree. I think once a day is plenty. Okay. I don't have a lot of time. It's going to be your afternoon if we get out of here late.
Sometimes his parents drive me crazy.
Ditto.
I will stop and ask for directions.
God had blessed me with an internal compass.
And in spite of all of these and many, many more differences, I still love this man.
I love you too, baby. You're awesome. Thank you. Take that. Thank you. Well, I share that with you on purpose because I want you to know before I share what I'm about to say about this candle, before I tell you how to keep it burning, before I tell you what Satan's trying to do to put yours out, I want you to understand you're not looking at a couple that just get in their home and just everything flows along. Like, no, not at all in the Seaborn home. I told you I was up 3 or 4 nights this week till 1:30, okay? You get it? I got a 21-year-old, an 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 12-year-old. We got issues in our house. You get it? Okay? So I'm trying to help you understand I relate to your life. And so what I have to do is instead of saying, Dan's got the answers, instead of saying that, I want to show you what's happening in our society. I want you as a group of guys to step back for a second and I want you to look at your life because some of you are 12 and you're striking matches. Some of you are 21 and you're thinking about that girl. You're dating her and you're really close to asking her. Some of you have been through 5 divorces. I don't know, but somebody here has been divorced 5 times and you're going, what's wrong with me? How can I do it? Well, the first thing I want you to know is that candle that's burning up there, I want you to get this. This is real important. You got to step back and see it. We think that marriage is about us, like me and Jane. It's not. When God designed marriage, he looked down from heaven and was like, okay, I got to somehow help these people understand what heaven's supposed to look like. So if I can get a man, and this is all throughout Scripture, Revelations, Ephesians, if I can get a man to act like Christ and a woman to act like the church, I'll put them together and I'll have a little piece of heaven on earth. And God goes, oh, that's what I'll do. I'll design a man and a woman to stay married for life and I'll give them, oh, then the kids growing up in that house, they'll be like, oh, this is like heaven. And so Satan said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cause divorce, and I'm going to tear this family to shreds, and I'm going to help kids learn what it is to grow up in hell on earth. And let me just ask you guys a question here, okay? Listen, would you say that your home, as you look at it, would you say it's more like heaven or more like hell? I'll be honest with you and tell you, there are days I feel like mine's just a little piece of hell. But my goal is, as a man, listen to me, you guys sitting in this room, listen to me, you're the owners of the responsibility of loving your wife and children in awesome and crazy ways, okay? And I'm going to show you right now. I'm going to have to do it really quick here. Up here on this thing now, I want you to look. We got a candle burning. And I want to show you what's happening in our society. Let me tell you what I see some of you men doing. You're doing it right now in your houses. You did it before you came here. Some of you have put like this globe over your marriage candle and you're snuffing your own marriage out. You're not honoring your wife. You're not celebrating her. You're not lifting her up. You don't encourage her. You don't say things to her like, I cherish you. I love you. I want to be a good husband to you. And you've put out the candle. There's no oxygen to give candle flame to this thing. See, it's out. And it's just a little puff of smoke left. If I light this candle and I get it going and it gets to burning, there's enough oxygen in this place right here that it's not going out as long as that wick is there. And you as men need to understand, a lot of you go, why am I having so much trouble in my family? Why am I struggling with my children? Why is my marriage not doing well? Because you're snuffing it out by the way you live. Yesterday, I was snuffing out my marriage. I was being critical. Jane couldn't do anything right on the plane down here. I'd be like, well, why are you doing that? And she finally just looked at me and said, can I do anything right? She was right. I had to turn to my wife yesterday and say, baby, I'm wrong. I'm being terrible. I said, here I am going down there to speak to all these guys. And as the husband right now, I mean, I'm not doing good at all. I'm just terrible.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
Some say abortion is harmless, even helpful for women. But is that really true? As a Christian, you know it's not. Are you ready to share with your friends what the Bible has to say, especially after Roe v. Wade? Nearly 5 decades of legalized abortion have harmed every aspect of our society, including women. Join us online October 4th at 7 p.m. Eastern as Alexander DeSantis speaks on how abortion harms our culture and disadvantages women. Register at focusonthefamily.com/lighthouse.
Man, I knew my marriage was falling apart. I just didn't know how to fix it.
I felt like I would always be alone, even if I stayed married.
At Focus on the Family's Hope Restored Marriage Intensive, we offer hope to couples in crisis so they can have the marriage they've always dreamed of.
For the first time, I felt like my husband truly heard me.
I've received some great tools from the counselors that have changed my life and my marriage.
To begin the journey of finding health, go to hoperestored.com today.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
Let me tell you something else that's going on in our society. Oh, yeah. They're kind of shooting at that candle. And they're saying, you know what? Marriage isn't a man and a woman. Marriage is a man and a man. Marriage is a man and adultery. And marriage is a man having a couple of women to sleep around with. Marriage is a man with his girls at the bar. And they're shooting at your candle saying, oh, go ahead and put it out, man. It's silly. Just put it out. Society's trying to redefine marriage. Let me just say this really bold and really strong. And you get in trouble for this around our nation. So I'm getting in trouble right now. Marriage was designed by God. You didn't come up with it, and I didn't come up with it. God came up with it. If he came up with it, don't mess with it. Don't mess with it. So while society shoots at it, you keep yours burning. Keep teaching your children that marriage is not man-made, marriage is God-made. Well, the Bible says that as men, you're to go home and you are to love your wife, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, as Christ loved the church. You need to go home and love her that way. And it starts with you praying for her. It'd be awesome if some of you would walk through the door and the first thing before you say anything, I said, baby, come here a second. The Lord's spoken to me this weekend. We're going to pray together that all the stuff he's put in my heart, the Lord will guide me through it. Because you got to know, like as soon as you hit these exits, as soon as you hit these exits, Satan's sitting out there in the parking lot going, come on out, boy. Come on out. I've been waiting for you to dismiss so I can dismiss him. And he's waiting for you. And you got to go, no, Satan. I claim through the blood of Jesus Christ that I can go home and love my wife, love my kids like Christ loved the church. That's what you got to do. And then And then I'm going to challenge you guys to do something. And I want to tell you, listen, I got to tell you why it matters. It's going to take me a second. I got to tell you a story to set up why it matters. When my boys were 6 and 3, I started doing something with them. We didn't have very much money at all, but I'm a big NBA fan, man. I love it. And I wanted to buy basketball cards, little packs of them when I was like, you know, young, married, et cetera. But we didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, we had kids, 2 boys, 6 and 3. And you know, Jane didn't like me spending that money. So I couldn't buy them for me. So I started buying them for the kids. You can get justified. You know, I'm like, Jane, I had to get these for the boys, you know. And then I took them away from them, you know. And then we started doing this. And when they were little, I'd tuck them in bed. I'd pray over them. And then I would say, did you guys look under your pillows? And they're like, what do you mean, Dad? I said, look under your pillows. And that first night, they reached back, and they pulled out from under their pillows a little pack of NBA cards. And, man, we would run over, we went over to Alan's bed, and we opened those cards up, and it was a festival. I mean, it was like, did you get a Michael Jordan? It was a big thing, getting a Jordan, you know? So we opened those cards up, pulled them out, we looked through them, and if you got a Jordan, it was like, couldn't even sleep, so excited. So we did this for a long time, and for years. Those boys are 6 and 3, and I did it for years and years and years. And I did that on bat. When they had tough days, I'd put them a little pack of cards. I'd play all kind of games with them. But to make the story short, I, the other week, had a really, really tough couple of weeks. That deal I was telling you, I stayed up to 1:30, wasn't going so good. And I had one of those days, I don't know if you've ever had this. I actually went to bed early, like about 8:30. I went to bed early. So nothing else bad could happen that day. You ever had one of those days? I said to Jane, I'm going to bed. If the phone rings, don't tell me. So I went to bed. I'm laying in bed. I'm trying to go to sleep. I'm restless. You've been there. And I'm laying in bed, and my sons came in that night to tuck us in. We have reached an age in our life where our kids tuck us in. I ask for cookies. I tell them I got to pee. I do all kind of stuff. And that's sad, but that is true. But I finished, you know, Alan came in, I should say, and he went over to his mom. He's 21. He prayed for his mom, gave her a good night kiss. Then he came around to my side of the bed, and I was at that in-out stage, you know, and I was there just kind of, hey, Alan. He goes, hey, Dad. And he gave me a kiss on my head, and he goes, Dad, I love you. I know you've been having a hard time, and he said, I pray for you. You're a good dad. Thanks, son. Good night. Good night. And he started to walk away. And as he was leaving the room, he looked back, and he said, hey, Dad, did you check under your pillow? No lie. And I went, don't mess with me, man. Don't mess with me. He goes, no, seriously. And I reached my hand back behind my pillow, and I honestly started crying. And I pulled that little NBA pack out from behind my head, and he had written a note on it that said, hey, Dad, I know you've been having a tough couple weeks. I wanted you to know that you're an awesome dad, and I love you. P.S., don't ever forget to check under your pillow. That's what the little note said. I started crying like that. I mean, it was awesome. And I said, well, come on, sit on the bed with me. Let's open them up. So he came and he sat on the bed with me. We opened it up, didn't get spit. And we sat there. But you know what? It didn't matter. It didn't matter. Now, here's why I told you that little story. Listen to me very carefully. 4 weeks ago, that 21-year-old boy stepped on a bus and moved to South Africa. I won't see him for 1 year. He's going to work with AIDS orphans. And he got on that bus, and I started crying. A big bus came through, several people going, driving to the airport, and I'm standing here crying like a baby. I had, by the way, I snuck a pack of NBA cards in his suitcase. He didn't get anything. And so he's standing on the bottom ledge of the bottom step to get on that big bus to go. And I'm out here standing by the car, and I'm waving, and I'm crying. I'm crying hard. My wife, Jane, the one you just met, she walked up. She put her arm through my arm. She's crying like crazy. And then she said this to me, honey, we've tried to stay married and give him a good example. We've loved him all these years, and we've worked for 21 years to give him to God. Let's let him go. And we cried together, and I said to my wife, I said, baby, we've given him a lot of things. I've given him cards. We've given him this. We support him to go to Africa. But I think probably one of the greatest gifts we ever gave him. You ready? That flame's still burning. And today, I'm not stupid. I know some of you are single parents and you'd love for your flame to still be burning. I want you to understand that your witness as a parent, even through a divorce, is huge. Single parents are some of the greatest examples of Christ I've ever seen. And I want to tell you today that my challenge for you is that the Lord would help you. Listen to me. The Lord would help you go home and be men who keep the candle burning. Listen, stay married for life.
Well, we're going to have to end right there with a great message from Dan Seaborn and his wife, Jane, and our thanks to our friends at Promise Keepers for letting us share this message with you today.
Yeah, we're running out of time, so let's wrap up with some follow-up resources for your marriage. I'd encourage you to get a CD of this presentation from Dan Seaborn. It'll have some extra content that we weren't able to include on the broadcast side. We'll send it out to you for a donation of any amount as you join us in our mission to help marriages thrive. If you can visit us online, you'll find a free marriage assessment that you can take. It's about a 10-minute survey that will help you see the strengths and weaknesses in your relationship, and then will lead you to resources that will help you improve those weaker areas. It's a great learning tool designed by our own Dr. Greg Smalley. So look for the marriage assessment when you visit the Focus on the Family website. And then finally, if your marriage is in serious trouble, I'd encourage you to consider attending a Hope Restored 4-day intensive. Our talented counselors will help you get to the root of your issues and learn a better way to communicate as a couple. It's an incredibly effective program with an over 80% success rate when we survey those couples 2 years later. Remember, Focus on the Family is here to help you. So please reach out to us.
And we're just a phone call away. Our number is 800-A-FAMILY, 800-232-6459. Or you can donate online and request your CD and take that marriage assessment and learn more about Hope Restored. It's all at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening today to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ. You're listening to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We'll take a quick break here and then return with another faith-building program for your family. Stay tuned.
As Christians, we're called to bring light to the world. And as Christian parents, we want our kids to answer the call too. Bring Your Bible to School Day is a great way to do that. It's a chance for your kids to grow their faith, evangelize, and be a light in their schools. So if a faith-filled, light-giving home is important to you, join Bring Your Bible to School Day on Thursday, October 6th. Register now at bringyourbible.org.
Brenda, what's one thing a mom or dad can do today to build a bridge of love to their adult child who has perhaps made a decision that they don't agree with?
So the number one thing is apologize to your child for your part. Because you probably have a part. And I think that's going to help them hear you faster than anything is a heartfelt apology.
Well, Brenda Garrison is our guest on today's Focus on the Family, and she brings some great perspective today as we look at parenting your adult children. I'm John Fuller, and your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly.
John, here at Focus on the Family, we're often talking about parenting the young child. And it's important to build a strong foundation to equip your children, but I would say your children of all ages. I mean, you never stop parenting. And I've seen that and heard that from my own brothers and sisters who have adult children now. We're still in that process. But they talk about the parenting issues that they face even with their children who are 20-something, 30-something, 40-something. And that's just the nature of parenting. It doesn't stop when they turn 18. And we want to talk today with someone who has a great heart for parents who are parenting those kids that maybe have made some bad choices.
Brenda Garrison, as I said, is our guest, and she's a popular speaker and author of a number of books, including Love No Matter What, which shares her parenting journey with her oldest daughter named Katie. And she's married to Gene. They have two other adult daughters as well, Kelsey and Carrie.
Brenda, let me say welcome to Focus on the Family.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I want to pick up right where you opened up and in that apology to your child. Something that I've observed, and I'd love your parenting perspective on this. The human heart seems to be made in such a way by the Creator that when we express contriteness, when we express love to another human being, it opens the heart of that person. It's almost, it seems to me, almost impossible for that person who's offended to resist opening up. Mm-hmm. That's how core it is to who we are as human beings. Respond to that. Do you think that's accurate?
I do. I do know there are some cases, I think, where the hurt is so deep, it's going to take more than one apology. It's going to take proof of your words. But it's a great start, whether it be a written word or face-to-face would, of course, be best. But I really do, because I think kids often think, the parents think they're always right. And we're not always right. And we need to let our kids know that.
Yeah. And, there is rightness. And we as parents need to be expressing that.
Right.
But so often, I think we as Christians, we want to adhere to the rules. We want to abide by those things God told us to abide by. It's important to us, and rightfully so. And then we want our children to do likewise. That can create great tension because they're on their own journey. They need parental boundaries.
Right.
Don't mishear me.
Right.
And that's something Gene and I are very strong about. But at the same time, at the core, the foundation, they need to know that you love them.
Definitely. I would say, though, unfortunately, a lot of times, especially Christian parents, tend to make everything a black and white issue. And everything is not a black and white issue. God has given us a lot of space to be our own individuals, especially with Katie. She is an artist.
Now, Katie's your oldest.
Yes, she's our oldest. She contributed to the book. I handed a chapter off to her and said, Kate, say whatever you want to say here.
Wow, that is brave.
I know. I said she had to be respectful, and she was. But I just wanted her, and some people say it's the best part of the book, because then they can kind of get inside their kid's head.
Yeah.
And she shares what we did wrong, what we did right, what she was thinking in the process. And it was very helpful. It was a very wonderful experience for both of us to kind of have a meeting of the minds after the fact.
Yeah.
It was very healing. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You talk about parenting as you went into it, Katie being your firstborn. You thought it would be kind of a simple plan. You were raised by parents that had a pretty good plan. You felt good about what you observed in your childhood. And you thought if you could apply those values and those principles, your formula would work as well. What happened?
Oh, that's a good question. It didn't work. It didn't work. The formula, I had great parents, and it worked for the five of us, but those things didn't necessarily transfer into my family. We wanted the same things. We wanted to love each other, love the Lord, and all the basics, but we needed a different plan to go about achieving those same things.
Well, let me ask you this, because some people, this is the crux of the issue. I mean, some people are going to defend the fact that doing the right thing, the formula, it worked in your mom and dad's case. All five of your siblings, you did well. So they would walk away from that experience saying, our parenting formula worked. What you're saying and what we need to tease out here a bit is you can apply that same formula with different people. And because of personality, temperament, environment, media influence, you grew up in a different era. I mean, technology is different.
Right.
Accessibility of our 12, 13, 14-year-olds to world data. It's just a different environment. And therefore, that formula may not work the same way. You got to do it differently. But talk about that conflict where in one family it worked well, in another family it doesn't work so well.
And even between kids and a family. What we did with Katie, we did differently with Kelsey and differently with Carrie. And that's why parents need to really lean into the Lord and say, what is it with this child? What is the best way to parent this child? And I often pray, God, help me be the mom this child needs, because it's going to be different with each kid.
Now, some people are going to hear different application of principle. You're not saying that.
No.
What are you saying that's different?
For instance, with Katie, she, like I said, she's an artist, and that really defines her as a person, and I didn't have a clue what that was about.
What does that mean to us that don't know Katie? What did that express?
That means she likes messy. She doesn't like black and white lines. Okay, she likes to just come and go and...
color she, outside the lines.
Oh, my word. There are no lines. Yes, definitely. Definitely. And so... you know, we on Saturday was cleaning day, so we divided the house into fours and we all cleaned.
We do the same
thing. Do you really? It's so, and when the kids are gone, I miss it so much. Now it's just me.
But there's some fights in there, right?
Yes, because she didn't want to do it exactly how I wanted. So what I needed to do was let up on her room and let her room be her messy place. And of course, you had to get the food scraps out of there and all of that. But just she could have clothes on the floor. She could have art supplies. When she was in college, in her undergrad, we went to visit her in her studio apartment. And we had moved her in. We knew what the apartment looked like. We went to visit. She knew we were coming. We got in the door and literally walked through a maze in this tiny, tiny studio apartment because it was covered with art projects, art supplies. There was no place to sit. She was beaming because this was her world that she had created. All of her art, it was hanging. It was sitting on the kitchen chairs. It was laying on the kitchen table. It was on the sofa. She was beaming. This was her world. And in that moment, it occurred to me, I have been stepping on her oxygen. I have been stepping on what makes her feel like Katie, because I insisted that she fit into my mold of neat and orderly.
Brenda, let me ask you this. I love the description of that, stepping on the oxygen hose. We've said that in marriage broadcast, John. But in the parenting concept, some might see that as weakness in your parenting approach, that the lack of discipline. They see cleanliness next to godliness. I'm amazed when you when you hear the late night shows from time, they show little snippets and they're on doing the street interviews. And I think one time I saw Jay Leno maybe, and he was asking that question, is cleanliness next to godliness in the Bible? And everybody said yes. Well, it's actually not there, is it?
No.
There's no scripture that says that. Exactly. But talk about how we convolute these things and create kind of extracurricular rules that maybe God isn't that concerned about.
I don't really think he is. The thing is, we have to give our kids a place to be who they are. It's going to ooze out somewhere. And if we can give them a space to be who they are with a messy bedroom, say, they are going to be way more apt to follow some other rules, such as curfew, such as our rules with the internet. They need a place to say who they are. You have a place to say who you are. Why can't we give our kids a place to be who they are? Then they're way more willing to come back and hear what we have to say when we know we're listening to
them.
What
guidelines did you apply to that? Because some things, it's right for parents to say, these are the rules and the parameters when it comes to electronics. You're only going to be able to do it for so many hours a week or whatever, or just on the weekend, something that we do at our house. But how do you know what's a principle and what's expression?
We have our core values at home. Safety, always, especially with three girls. We want them to be safe. We want them to learn how to work hard. We want them to be responsible. We want them to be moral. So we would make our decisions based on these core principles, these core values. And for every family, I think it would be different on what that's going to look like. But you know what your kids need and how much influence they can take from the outside world, how much time they need at home. We used to keep Sunday night sacred. We don't go anywhere, even church. It's our time to regroup, to spend time together, maybe have a hot dog roast in the fireplace.
Sunday night. Yeah.
Sunday night. That was our time. We rebuilt family. We refreshed ourselves for the week. That was us. And so I think parents need to be willing to say, what is important to us and how is it going to look for our family? And then be willing to say no to the things that don't really matter.
Brenda, you talk in your book, Love No Matter What. You talk about your oldest being 18, coming home and kind of giving you and your husband some devastating news. What was that?
She said on the weekend, this was during the middle of the week, she said on Saturday she was moving out to an apartment. She worked part-time with minimum wage. She didn't have enough money to live. She was going to be sacrificing her college money to do so. And she had a boyfriend in the shadows. We didn't trust him to not take advantage of the situation. It's not that we don't want our girls to be independent. We do. She was leaving with a bad attitude, kind of throwing college to the side, just for the sake of getting out of the house because she thought she just couldn't take it anymore.
Tell us now with Katie, what was she expressing? I mean, there are many, many parents listening that have, you know, 15 to 23-year-olds that are acting as Katie was acting. They're tired of being restricted, kind of the schedule, the expectations. They want to break loose from it. This is right where you're at. Katie, your 18-year-old, is saying, I want to move out. I'm tired of it. In so many ways, you and your husband are dealing with it. She moves out. What's the behavior that she then begins to express once she's left the home? Is she now a budding flower? Is your relationship turned to roses?
No, it took a while. she had some crashes and burns along the way. Basically, like I said, she wanted to get out because she just didn't like the rules. she just wanted to be on her own. And nothing was going to make her happy until she was. She did eventually move in with the boyfriend that was lurking in the shadows, which we weren't happy about that.
But well, I love the disclosure of that, but I mean, that had to be a crushing blow.
Yeah.
Again, you went,
yeah,
oof, exactly. Bad choices.
And, you know, we got to the point, I think Gene got there before I did, but for
that's
me,
your husband, Gene.
Yes, yes. Got to the point where nothing surprised us. We've adopted this little motto that said, it is what it is, and now it's ours to deal with. So we just kind of, you brace yourself when you get the phone call. She always had that tone of voice that you knew something was coming, and you just brace yourself. And it's like, this is our reality now, and how are we going to live with it? And grieving what we thought was going to be our future, and just saying, this is what we're dealing with, and how are we going to have relationship with her in the midst of the life that she's living? Because that's the most important thing.
Brenda, that grieving I want to talk about, okay, because that grieving process, people wouldn't recognize it necessarily as that, but that is exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. You're grieving the loss of an expectation that you thought would be fulfilled.
Sure.
That can play with people in a variety of ways. How did you and Gene in your marriage manage that? Because usually there's conflict there with the parents, between them. The conflict with the child is obvious, but it's laying in bed at night having this talk, and it can be, you have failed her, or you have failed her. You begin to incriminate one another about your lack of parenting skills or what you didn't do. Did you and Gene have any of that?
We didn't. However, we kept the conversation going. We've always been like daily talkers. I mean, just always keeping up with each other daily. And we were encouraging to each other. And then as God started to show me what I was doing wrong with her and how I needed to change my parenting style, because obviously it wasn't working. I wasn't relating to her. She wasn't feeling like I cared for her. As I started to open up to Gene and share, okay, this is what I'm thinking, he's like, okay, he very graciously and gently said, yes, you could try this, or the next time you use that tone, then maybe you could use a different tone. And he kind of helped me along in that without being condemning.
Did you see a different relationship that Gene had with your daughter Katie than you had?
Oh, my word, yes. Oh, my word. He was so easy. I mean, just sit back in the chair and chat.
Did that make you angry?
Angry, yes, and because I wanted him to address things that were like stirring in me, and again, personalities. He's more laid back. He's more the introvert. I'm more the extrovert. I'm more, you know, type A, and it's like, you know, we can't be happy as a family until we deal with this. And I think too many parents take that. We can't be happy as a family until everybody's doing what they should do.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
At Focus on the Family, we know you want to see your grandchildren follow Christ. Here's how you do that. The Legacy Grandparenting Summit, the only national conference on Christian grandparenting, coming to over 100 locations on October 20th and 21st. You'll find wisdom, direction, and inspiration from speakers including Ann Graham Lotz and Miles McPherson. Register now for the Legacy Grandparenting Summit at legacycoalition.com/summit.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
If you were to wind the clock back to you and Gene getting married, Katie's on the way. Katie's now 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 12, 13, 14. What would you have done differently?
That's a good question, because some of what she was going through, I had no clue. I tell a story in the book when Katie is 23 and she gets together with one of her childhood friends. They've been friends since preschool and they stayed friends all through school. And the friend tells her of this story of when they were in junior high and a couple of the good Christian girls at school took her friend out to the edge of the playground past where the playground supervisors were and told her, nobody likes you. You have no friends. And the little girl was devastated. And then Katie tells her friend, they did the same thing to me. And neither girl spoke of it to anyone. Katie didn't tell me, her friend didn't tell anyone until they were 23 years old. And no wonder she would come home in a storm cloud. School was tough. And so some of the things you don't, as a parent, you don't know what your kids are going through. You don't know what they're dealing with. And you need to show them love and understanding. Yes, they cannot come home and start kicking the dog and hitting the little brother. That's not allowed. But you can give them time to go in their room and decompress. They don't have to come right home and start talking to you. They may just need some time. Katie shares often in the book, I didn't know what I was feeling. I didn't know how to process what I was feeling. I was just all stirred up. So going back, I think I wish I would have had a clue that Katie was a different personality than mine. And then finding a mentor or an advisor with that personality to help me kind of say, you know what? This is how your daughter's going to deal with this, and this is where she is.
Hmm. I think you addressed this in the book, Brenda. Did she feel that she just wasn't safe in sharing some of these emotions with you? I mean, were you just boxing her into behaviors without really understanding her heart then?
I think so. I think, again, Katie didn't know. You know, I figure things out. When I'm feeling it, I figure it out, and then I talk about it a lot. And Katie doesn't process that way. It takes her a while to figure it out, and then she doesn't want to talk about it a lot. And I was always thinking, oh, if I could just talk to her, I can ask her questions, I can pull it out of her. And that made her want to withdraw even more. I needed to give her time to process things and to come out and to talk to me instead of trying to pull it out of her and make everything better. Because you just can't. They come home, they're upset, and sometimes you just can't make it better in the first 5 minutes.
Brenda, I would think that when you look at it too, that there can be a lot of guilt in that process at different stages for different reasons. Right. And maybe you talk about your daughter Katie being told people don't like her on the playground, and she didn't share that. I would think for you, perhaps as a parent, I'm just guessing, did you feel some guilt that you maybe didn't even share with Jean about your relationship with Katie? I mean, did you have your own secret guilt that was going on?
I had a lot of guilt. Because who did she clash with more than anybody? Me. Because, like I said, Jean and she had a better relationship. He was more laid back than I was. And I was, yeah, she would fight with her sisters, but the major storms happened with me. So I carried a lot of guilt into her adult years. And then finally... And then I also, then every decision that she made, it was like, okay, this is because you, the mother, have cornered her into a bad decision or haven't loved her well enough or whatever. And finally, one day, God really made it clear to me, Katie's making this decision on her own. This is not your fault.
Right.
And that was huge for me. I still had a part to play. I still had to build relationship with her and not give her reasons to push me away and to be challenged or whatever. But... she was making these decisions on her own. She knew she had choices.
Brenda, it's really important for a parent to know how to ratchet down. I think it's very hard to do. Obviously, reading the Word, trusting in the Lord, praying for that child are all right spiritual things to do. But practically speaking, then, you're doing all that. The Lord getting a hold of your tongue and your heart. Talk to us for a minute about that and how over time you became better at it. Because I would think for most parents, that's the core problem, is you just speak as quickly as it comes to you without thinking about the shame you might be giving your child, the message of inadequacy that you're giving your child. And you, in the attempt to help them be better decision makers, you're actually loading on more obstacles for them to be able to make those decisions, because they secretly now are walking away in their heart of hearts thinking, maybe mom's right. Maybe I'm not that good. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe I don't have that wisdom. So they begin that self-doubt. Where did God really work on you to kind of get a hold of that responsiveness that you had?
First, it goes back to the one-liner, without relationship, you have nothing. He showed me, without relationship, I have no influence. I have no voice. I'm just background noise in her life. I have to pursue relationship first, before rules, before anything else. And so in the midst of that, I just let God slowly teach me, how does this sound? How, you know, is this going to be encouraging to her? I tell a story in the book how she would come home from whichever apartment she was living in to spend the weekend and dump all of her stuff at the end of the breakfast bar, just kind of in the traffic area. I'm talking computer, art supplies, dirty laundry, everything you can think of. And instead of making a big deal about that, I finally stopped talking about it. And I just picked up her stuff and moved it. Because is it more important that the kitchen be neat and tidy? Or is it more important for me that Katie come home feel loved and stay longer and come home more often because she feels loved. So it's just deciding what is important. Dirty laundry in my kitchen, not a big deal. I know where to get rid of it very quickly. It's more important to have that relationship and to give up the things that I thought were important. They're not. Mm-hmm. There's one thing that's important, my daughter and her knowing God.
Brenda, we've talked a lot about how you and your husband, Gene, and Katie have worked out the issues. Mm-hmm. Now you're down the line. Katie's helped you write this book, and that influence is really important because I think it makes the book more real. Mm-hmm. But how are you doing today? How's Katie? How's your relationship? Where are you at?
We're doing great. The kids were all home this past weekend. So we had Carrie was home, our youngest, with her fiance. Katie was home with her fiance, and then Kelsey and Caleb would be her husband, were in and out. And Sunday was the last day we had a brunch before everybody head back. And Katie came up to me in the kitchen, just up to my face, and said, "Mom, I want to thank you for everything you've done." And she listed cleaning, cooking, and all of that thing. And she's an adult. She knows how much work it is. And so Katie is now a grad student in Indiana pursuing her Master's of Fine Arts. So she will graduate in another year. And like I said, she's now engaged. She's doing great. She's happy, and best of all, we have a great relationship. The whole family does. And that's,
so backing off and concentrating on loving Katie, yes, worked.
It really did. And, you know, I've gone to stay with her in her apartment in Indiana, and it's neat as a pin.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She keeps it very neat. Yeah.
Have you ever talked about the why of that? Was she trying to get your goat, as we say?
Oh, yeah. In fact, she put that little piece in the book. She said she noticed when I stopped making a big deal about all the stuff she dropped at the end of the bar in the kitchen. And she said, when my mom stopped making a big deal about it, I stopped having to make a big deal about it. And so she would just come in the house and go take her things to her room, go take the dirty laundry to the laundry room without just seeing if she could bait me by leaving stuff there.
Well, and so often, and, you know, Dr. Kevin Lehman has been at that very microphone telling us when you stop making it about control, you actually begin to win.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what you're expressing there.
Exactly.
Back off on the small stuff, concentrate on the big stuff. And that really, there's nothing bigger than loving your child, no matter what. So often I'm thinking spiritually that the Lord has a bunch of teenagers in us.
Oh, my word.
Isn't it true? Think of the parenting.
I think the simplicity
of it is, I'm going to make it so obvious that I'm here.
Yeah. Exactly.
And there is that kind of relationship between him and us, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. In fact, I have grown to better appreciate what Christ has done for me and how well he loves me through this whole experience with Katie.
Yeah.
It's like, how would Jesus show her love? Oh, what does he have to forgive of me 1,000 times a day? And I try to help parents see that, you know what, you're not so perfect either. You have plenty of issues, and God's giving you space to work out your issues and time. How many years have we been working on some of these things? And he's giving you space to do it. Can we not do that for our kids? And so, yeah, I think we just need to look at that parent-child relationship with God a little bit as well.
I mean, this is great stuff. Brenda Garrison, your book, Love No Matter What. I believe in that message. I really do. I think we can apply it not only in our parenting and in our marriages, but also in the culture at large.
Yes.
I think it's exactly why Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself, because he knows the secret of our hearts, and that is when we feel loved and respected by people, we open up to them. Mm-hmm. We typically end up calling them our best friends, and that's what you're expressing today. Thanks for being with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you both.
As a parent, I'm sure you can relate to the journey that Brenda has been on, and maybe that's part of the path of life that God has for you. You're bound to experience a lot of joys and some struggles along the way as a mom or a dad. And if you're at that stage of life when your children are starting to express, maybe even exert their independence, Brenda's book is a terrific help. It's called Love No Matter What, When Your Kids Make Decisions You Don't Agree With. Make a donation today of any amount, either a monthly pledge or one-time gift, to Focus on the Family. And we'll say thanks for joining us in ministry by sending the book to you. Also, let me mention that we do have a team of caring Christian counselors. If you need someone to talk with, please know that we can set up a free phone consultation, and our counselors can hear your struggles and point you towards some further help. They'll even pray with you if you'd like. You can make a donation, request Brenda's book, and also get in touch with one of our counselors when you call 800, the letter A, and the word family. Or stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. When you request that book from Focus on the Family, by the way, you'll get a free audio download of the entire conversation and some additional content that we couldn't include today. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.